You're a full service US Navy Chief Petty Officer. You're an IT professional and very recently a certified project director under the Institute of Project Management. So you're quite a multifaceted and multidimensional character. What else have you got to add to this shiny biography?
Oh man, I guess the only thing that I would add to it, I've been doing it for 18 years. I'm looking at 18 and a half plus years now of service in the Navy and looking at transitioning here in the next year and a half. Super excited. I did just get my CPD with you as my evaluator, and it was a great experience. It was pretty awesome. Being able to tie my already existing knowledge that I've had in the military and tie that into a civilian equivalent as it's done amazing things with my confidence, right? I was really scared. I was really nervous about my transition. I wasn't sure what I was going to do or if any of my skills translated. And I just happened to see DOL Coach pop up with this, this link on LinkedIn. Hey, come get your CPO course. I'm like, oh, I'm already a CPO. I'm a chief. So in the Navy, we call them CPOs, so chief petty officers. So I saw this come across. I'm like, how are you awarding chief stuff to? So I clicked on it. I learned a little bit more about it. And I was like, man, you know what? I can't beat this. Like, the price is just amazing. Let's just do it. Let's see where it goes. And from there, it just skyrocketed. Being able to complete the CPO certification, huge confidence booster. And then being able to finish my CPD, certified project director, absolutely amazing. It's been a pretty awesome ride so far.
So you said a couple of things there, and this, just for the audience here, let's set the scene, right? So the world out there, as we know it, as you and I know it, is Silo A, all military, and Silo B, everyone else. Okay, so in Silo B, and I've had the benefit of straddling both worlds, but you just mentioned a couple of things there about confidence boosting and being nervous or a bit scared, and this rough, tough, steely, military dude. What have you got to be scared of in the civilian sector?
No, it's absolutely. I mean, for me, military is all I've ever known. I finished high school. I did a semester in college, and it just wasn't a fit for me at the time. I didn't have the discipline. I didn't have the ability to go to class again. I just got out of high school. But a buddy called me and said, "Hey, let's join the military. Let's go submarines, and it's going to be great." And I said, sure, let's do this. And that's all I've ever known. So my entire adult life has been nothing but Navy. It's been military. I wake up, I have a uniform, I put it on, I go to work, I get done, I come home, and then I rinse and repeat all the time. Civilian side, completely different process. Yes, you still have to wake up. You still have to get dressed and go into work or telework in this post-COVID world that we live in now. But I can work for so many different people. It's not just one entity. I've always worked for the Navy, and the Navy's told me where to go. I get to choose where I want to go now. If I decide I want to work for a company A, and company A is like, hey, this is great, company B pays better, well, maybe I go to company B, or I stay with company A because their work culture is just so great. But I have that option now, and that's pretty terrifying. Just from my standpoint, because I haven't had that option yet. And
is that like a feeling of agoraphobia? You come out of this sort of closed environment and then go into this open environment. It's the perception of this too much choice is a little bit overwhelming.
It can be, yeah, absolutely. I mean, with so many different companies out there, I mean, you always have the top big Fortune 500 companies, but then you have small startup companies you can work for too, if you want to. The choices are truly endless out there if you're willing to put in the effort and look. But yeah, absolutely. Having that, dead set, I know that I'm going to get paid on the 1st or 15th of every month, no matter what. Get out in the civilian world, and that's not a guarantee. You could work for a company on the first and not work for them on the 15th. It all depends on what their mission and vision is, and what their manning is, and how they source those people and those jobs. So
yeah,
pretty scary sometimes.
Yeah, perception is reality for sure. And I'd like to explore that in a little bit, but let's come back. You were talking about post-COVID world, and it's interesting. I got friends over in the UK who were career submariners as well. And, you know, I was in fact talking to one guy recently, and I was just talking to him about, you know, you do a deployment under the sea. You don't have windows. You don't have natural daylight. You don't have a lot of things that we take for granted. And then you come into this COVID world where we're all in lockdown, or even pseudo lockdown, because there's, well, it's just people are complaining about lockdown, right? And yet they're all out in their cars, or where I live, they're out on the beach or in the park, and no one's really struggling to get into a supermarket these days, or get right. Go to their favorite restaurant for a plate of food and a beer or whatever. Tell us a little bit, without obviously transgressing any classifications, what is lockdown really, really like, and how do you manage that challenge?
Oh man, great question. The post-COVID and then post-COVID for the Navy, I got to see two different sides. I was at a shore command. So my primary place of work was at a training facility. So I was an instructor. When we got into COVID full swing, we had shut down pretty much all services with the exception of essentials. And those essentials were, we call them team trainers. It's where the submarine crews will come in, they'll train as a team, we'll certify them, and then they go out to sea and they complete their mission. That is what we were down to. Before, we would do a classroom to teach maintenance courses. I teach four different maintenance courses, so I would teach those. Individual trainers, I would teach those, but all those went away. So our manning situation, you still have everyone there, but only when they need to be there. And then as we started rolling out of COVID, we started rolling into this post-COVID environment. We started turning classrooms on and actually getting the maintenance courses back online, but it was very limited. We went from a class size of, you know, 6 to 12 down to 2 or 4 because of the space restriction and how many students we could have just in the building altogether. For the submarine side, when I transitioned, I was on the submarine half. This was post-COVID, so I didn't get to see the whole COVID portion on the sub, but the post-COVID side, it was restricted in the sense of, yes, we had all the sailors on board, they were doing work, we were trying to get ready to get underway, but the services that we could get from the shipyard were limited because we only had so many shipyard workers to support our work on the boat to get us ready. So it's definitely been a challenge, one, on the training side to get sailors out to the fleet so that they can progress in their career and support the boats so they can go out. But on the submarine side, it's been also very challenging, making sure that, one, everyone stays safe and healthy. You know, that's first and foremost for sure. And then being able to support the mission and get boats out to sea where they belong. So it's definitely been a challenge, and how that's been done, you know, leadership has done a pretty good job of making sure that happens for sure.
Let's explore a little bit the feelings around that. You know, I speak to a lot of my contemporaries around, you know, mental health awareness in the private sector, you know, and a lot of people have really struggled with relocating or going into a virtual workspace. And what's that sensation that you feel when you know you go under the water? Right. And now I'm under the water, or I'm about to go under the water, and I am not coming above the water again for whatever period of time. So your average, you know, Joe like me, who thrives now every day, can't wait to see the sun come up, right? It's never short of like a look out the window and just can basically I can get my car and go where I want, and you, that never goes away. That, but then you as soon as you go under the water, you're completely devoid of all those senses and sights and smells and things we take for granted. How does that impact you?
Oh man. I think this is kind of a two-part answer here, Angus. I mean, when I joined was back in 2003 timeframe, right? So but let's reverse our time just, you know, a short 18 years ago. We're still pretty fresh in the 9/11 incident. So yeah. Morale across the country was still pretty high. Yeah. People wanted to join the military. The generation that was there at the time as well, you know, was a mixed hybrid. We still had Generation X, Generation Y, and then it was a mix of us in between that identified a lot with Gen X, but we were still considered, you know, the newer age generation. So we still had some of those old traditions and some of those old, what's the correct word to use here? Sense of country, yeah, more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, not the political pieces aside, that's how we operated, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now let's fast forward today. You know, we're looking at, you know, 2021.
Yeah.
A completely new generation of sailors is coming in.
Yeah.
Very different of how they operate.
Yeah.
Very different of, you know, their lifestyle as they grew up. My generation, we grew up where you woke up in the morning, you went outside, you played with your friends in the dirt and the mud, and you got completely messy, and you came home, you ate, you went back outside, you played until it was dark, and you came home. But my generation also got, you know, the first set of cell phones. Computers were becoming a natural household occurrence item.
Yeah.
Today's generation, they grew up with smartphones. You know, it's a computer in your pocket. Digital age, information is 100% accessible to anyone across the world.
Yeah.
And that changes how you operate. When I go out and I am underwater, I can be completely autonomous. I'm used to the schedule. I'm used to the routine. You get into your 8-hour cycle where you have 8 hours watch, 8 hours off. You sleep for 8 hours. There's your day. but looking at the new generation, right? It's something that I have to take into consideration just as a leader is, yeah, my new generation of sailors, they're used to waking up in the morning and being completely plugged in. They have the internet.
Yeah.
As soon as they wake up on a boat, you don't, you know, you know, like you mentioned, right? You wake up, you look at the sunset and you can drive anywhere. When we're out, you don't have the internet. It's just not there. The most that we get a message that has our news on it. And the news is specifically prescribed to us from our, our overarching command. Yeah. We'll call it that.
Yeah.
So it is different how I operate versus how I know my sailors operate now.
Yeah.
So it definitely can take a toll. Seeing the new generation come in, their mental state can shift. Some of them are very, very much in tune. They can get into that 8-hour rotation. Everything's fine. And there are some that, you know, take a little bit of additional support and help to get them through, you know, the day, the week, the month, the year, yeah, that we're gone.
You know, my entrepreneurial brain sitting here thinking that there's businesses out there now that have these techno detox, right? Like yoga retreats or wildlife retreats. And you can have when you transition out, Michael, you could have your own submarine style techno detox.
Oh, there we go. Absolutely.
So maybe projecting forward. So I think you said you've got you get like an 18-month lead time between planning to go out and then going out the gates?
So for me, I've already started my planning for my retirement.
Yeah.
it ranges. It depends on the command you're at, you know, what your manning at that particular command is like. I've seen people who were able to spend, you know, their entire last 3-year tour preparing to get out of the military. But I also have seen some friends who have had 6 months to get out of the military, just based off of the deployment and the mission cycle and trying to get out and still support the submarine. So it varies for sure. I started my planning when I was still on shore duty just before I came to the submarine. So I think I'm a little better off than most, for sure. But yeah, the typical time is about a year to 18 months prior to is when someone typically starts looking at their retirement date.
So you, it was quite interesting to me when going back a bit over some of your professional history and when you did your, you know, your project director accreditation, you were sort of directing traffic. And you were doing a role that a lot of people in the civvy world wouldn't really direct those kind of resources till, you know, they get into an executive, senior management or executive position. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you told me when you were going through that examination process. And then, and I know you seem to have a love of IT and IT programming or systems administration. What do you hope to see when you get out in the civvy world off the back of that?
Got it. Okay. Well, the first part, your first question, you know, the experience piece for, you know, directing, it was my instance was, it was unique to me, but I'm very fortunate for it. For me, I had the ability to do a chief season, which for those of you who are in the military, if you're Navy, you understand what that is. You know, it's a pretty big and complex program that we run in the Navy. For those of you who don't know what that is, but every year we advance E6 sailors to the rank of Chief Petty Officer, E7. When we do that, we have several projects that are run under a single program, and that program has E6 sailor comes in, E7 sailor is pinned, and then they rotate out to the fleet to fill leading chief petty officer roles, a leadership role.
Before you go on, and you gave me a really good example. So for those people who are non-military, you know, what would that look like in a civilian or a private sector environment?
No, absolutely. So for this instance, it would be a large-scale program.
Yeah.
My large scale program had its own specific budget that was assigned to it.
Yeah.
I had projects that had sub projects underneath them.
Yeah.
So it very quickly, that's the breakdown structure. I had myself as the program lead. Ultimately, I had myself as the program lead. It wasn't like that originally. Yeah. I'm fortunate that it happened that way. The two program leads that were above me, unfortunately, both of them had to step away from their position, not any fault of their own. They just had to step away because they had other responsibilities they had to take care of. I was the third in line who I was trying to learn how the process worked and ultimately got, you know, put in the position to do that. I mean, like, as you mentioned, you know, the role that I fill would be typically someone who is more of the, you know, senior executive type level of program management, where I just kind of got thrown in.
If you look at this world of remote location working, did you not have, so you're sort of in one location and then you've got these managers that you're directing to drive a training program for junior leaders to become senior leaders, but they're also in a dislocated geography, and you know, you're basically, you're not in the same room in the same location. You're actually having to run a trust network. So you've got a network out there of people beneath you who are then running programs to specification and to technical outputs that you've got to direct from a from your Zoom or from your remote location. Is that right?
No, absolutely. 100%. For the program that I ran, my program was specifically in charge of three different bases.
Yeah.
And of those three bases, none of them were geolocated next to each other.
Yeah.
One of them was close. The other one was, about a 2.5-3 hour drive away.
Yeah.
Trying to run projects in each one of those areas, absolutely. You know, take and use all types of medium that you have available to you. You know, Zoom, email. A lot of the things that I did specifically were email related, yeah. Just because it's easier that way. But I would hold meetings with all of my project managers, so they would come in, give me a brief on their individual project, how it was going, is the scope of work getting completed, is it on track, not on track, is it on budget, not on budget, are we going to hit our milestones or completion dates, and I would do that about every month until we got closer to the actual kickoff of the event, and then I shifted that to twice a month, yeah. And then it shifted into weekly reports for all of the individual projects whenever their kickoff date was to make sure that we were ready to go. But definitely a challenge.
What was the time frame of one of these training programs?
Oh, goodness. So the program itself, I would spend anywhere from 9 months to a year of time planning for this event. And the event is about 6 weeks. When you look at it from, you know, a time standpoint, you spend a lot of time planning to make sure everything's in place, good to go, permissions are set. Because my program, the way that it was run, it is not just military. I had to work with my civilian side as well. So I had to work with the city of Silverdale and the city of Bremerton for some of the events that I put on. And those take a long time to get through. If anyone's ever worked in, you know, government side of the house trying to do government contracting, it definitely takes some time. Luckily, my project leads, I gave them enough time to go through and sift through those items. Some of them kind of missed the mark here and there, but we were able to get those back on track and make sure that the events actually went off without a hitch.
Reminds me of athletes, if you think about it. I'm looking at your time frame there. So you're like sort of in that situation, like sort of 80% planning for 20% performance, right? And
oh, yeah.
Once you've pulled the trigger on everything, it's all go. And if you look at a professional athlete, if they're playing, you know, one big game a week or a couple of games a week, whatever their sport is, or going to a track meet or whatever, everything right. else is prepping for that one opportunity to perform. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So that's quite interesting, because I think that's where oftentimes projects and a project management world sort of differs slightly from a standard operating world, because when you pull the trigger yes. on performance, you're sort of hoping that all your plans and preparation are coming to fruition in a single moment, as it were.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've done operations management as well. When I was at my training facility, I was in a position what's called the fleet scheduling officer. My role in that position was I had to build training plans for our ballistic missile submarines so that they could train, certify, and then get out to sea to do that mission. But their schedule is so fluid. You know, I could have a full schedule built out, ready to go, and then get told, oh, hey, you know, their underway time shifted. Now it's going to shift to the right 2 weeks. So I need to add 2 weeks worth of trainers in there or shift the certification date. So that one's constantly shifting all year round. And I had 14 crews that I was responsible for building those individual training plans for and divvying up 72 trainers. So operations side, it's completely different. Whereas the program that I ran, it was absolutely, just like you said, you plan for everything, and as soon as it goes, it just goes. And whether it's good or bad, it's going to continue to go. And then hopefully you capture all the lessons learned at the very end of it, and you build on those lessons for the next year.
It's going to roll without you, though. Whether you're in charge or not, it's just going to keep rolling, isn't it?
Absolutely. That is a very true statement.
What are you... Actually, that segues nicely into... I've done a lot with leadership development, coach development, and athlete and executive development over the years. And I'm assuming then the temptation at times is to micromanage. When you've got something that dislocated, that spread out, and with that kind of pressure load, knowing that once it's gone, it's gone. You can't, once the horse is out the stable and running around the track, you're not going to be able to pull it back in. So how do you resist the temptation to micromanage?
Oh man. I think this ties in with one of your earlier questions when you talked about, your mental health and stability. You know, there's definitely a piece that you have to consider when you're doing, a large scale program like that. Because I'll tell you right now, the temptation is just to dive right in. Look at every single aspect, make sure everything is right. Down to the individual hourly schedule to make sure everything's good. But that comes with a price. One, it comes with a price to your own mental health and your stability. There will be nights where I would get in first thing in the morning at around 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I would work on the program until about, 8 o'clock at night. Not sustainable hours, put it that way.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the other piece of that too is, developing trust in your project managers. It's very easy to jump in and critique someone else's plan and to dig down into their plan all the way down to the bottom and until you find something and you're like, I found that one thing. But that comes at a cost. You lose the ability to trust your project managers. You lose the ability to say, hey, I need X done, and they can take that. He or she can lead it to their 100% of their ability and then let them present a product to you. There's definitely some trade space when you look at how far down do you go. Now, obviously, if you're getting, Angus, I think, I talked to you about this one, was one of my projects. Everything on the outside looked fine. The brief that he presented me, everything was good. Everything was great. No problems. But then I see on his list that contract hadn't been approved or signed out yet. And it kind of cued me in on something. And I was like, hey, if we don't have that contract, the event can't start. So where are we at with this? And that's when I had to start digging into it a little more. And then I found out it just hadn't been approved. The contract was not ready to go. We weren't ready to start the event, and it was getting ready to kick off in a couple weeks. So luckily I was able to dig in deep during that meeting. And if I had a little bit of foresight, I would have taken a look at the timeline just a little closer to make sure that, the critical path work was completed in advance instead of waiting until the go time, which we would have missed the mark.
Would you say then it's fair to say that allowing yourself room to just step back out of everything and just reflect and give yourself some downtime allows you then to sort of think around all the corners of your task or everything that's going on so you can catch those situations?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, you have to. What I've found is that you get the blinders on, right? So for anyone who's an equestrian or, deals with horses, they have blinders, right? And as soon as you have blinders on, the only thing you see is directly in front of you. And you can't see anything else in your peripherals. When you're doing program management, you have several projects. If you spend so much time and focus on one thing, you're going to miss something somewhere else. So absolutely, just like you said, take a step back, let the project managers come to you with everything and just understand, like, hey, give them the leeway. And I will tell you, some of the best lessons I've ever learned is when I failed, because those will stick with you longer. And that was one that I learned very early on in my naval career was let people do their job and let them surprise you.
So what would be on top of that then in terms of methodology that allows you to do that, allows you to take a step out and not cave in to, you know, the need to micromanage it? You've got a lot of experience, I think, and I'm listening to you now, and that whether you're military or not, your piece of experience there could play out in any environment, actually. So what one thing, what one cue or tip would you give to the world on how to do that?
One cue or tip. Trust. And that's not an easy one. That is hard. In the military, you have the ability to trust everyone.
Yeah.
Because in a military environment, you have to trust the person next to you. If I'm combating it casually on a submarine, I have to trust that the person wearing their submarine dolphins next to me is going to do their job.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
It works the same way in the civilian world.
Yeah.
You have to trust that your people that are in the place that they're in are there to do their job 100%. Let them prove otherwise. Then you can start diving into, you know, different ways of trying to steer them, right? An example I have for you is recently I had a leadership change in my own team. I had someone advance to the next pay grade, and they were originally my second person in charge.
Yeah.
So I had to swap them out with someone else. Someone else got to have the opportunity to advance. What I would expect and what I trusted my team to handle over the weekend, one item got dropped. It was okay. Nothing bad happened. But now I understand that I can trust my new person, but he definitely needs a course correction. And I think that's where you can dive into the, you know, I do have a horrible tendency of trying to drive in and try and work the problem myself. But restraining yourself and just having that trust in your team definitely goes a long way.
Yeah, no, for sure. Good for you. But let's turn this around. And you're now pioneering your own life into a whole new adventure. Let's see if we can do a bit of myth busting on the way through. So you're looking out at this big new world, the civilian private sector. What's your biggest hope and your biggest concern?
Ooh, biggest hope and concern. Ooh, that's a good one. All right. Biggest hope. My biggest hope is to find something that I want to do for the rest of my life. That's my biggest hope. You know, I've done the Navy for almost 20 years, and I have loved every last second of it. You know, all the deployments I've done, all the places I've been to, the scene, it's been amazing, and I love it. Now I'm hoping to find something in the civilian world that I love just as much, that I want to come in, I want to work, I want to do everything, because I just believe in that mission and vision of that company. So that would be my hope.
Would that be in the IT sector or somewhere else?
Absolutely. You know, IT sector, you know, I'm a system and network administrator, my current position, and a information system security manager.
Yeah.
So, you know, doing something information technology, cybersecurity, you know, cloud type architecture or, you know, cloud management of network would be awesome. But I have...
What is it in that world that generates the thrill?
Ooh.
If we bait that hook and you know, based on what you just said, you know,
you know what it is? The challenge of it.
Right.
Because not every day is the same.
Right.
You know, for a network, I've had a single week where I've come in and I have had an entire switch go down. So for those who don't speak IT, it's a piece of equipment that allows different pieces of computers to talk to each other on a network. Those switches are pretty smart, and you have to get pretty creative when you're building them. so that, you know, computer A can talk to B, but computer A can't talk to C. Mm. So I've had one of those fail and I've had to rebuild one, which is not a standard thing that you would do, but you have to have knowledge of it. And then the same week I had a computer just completely die and I have to do troubleshooting on it to figure it out, and found out it was something simple. Going in and the unknown of what's going to happen for the day, just to keep you on your toes, that has been what's really rewarding for me going into work and seeing and operating my networks. It's been pretty fun.
Yeah, having those are fun days, aren't they?
Stressful, but super fun.
You've got a continuum of mundane and stress, haven't you?
Yes, absolutely. If everything is working inside of a room, that's like the perfect IT's world. But coming in and seeing something for the first time and not really knowing, but then figuring it out with, you know, you and your team.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing stuff.
So what's your biggest concern or the biggest myth that you'd like to bust around the civilian sector or the private sector?
So my concern and myth kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So when I first got onto LinkedIn and when I was first looking at transitioning, I was told that you have zero experience in project management. You don't know what it is. You don't know the term. You don't know anything about it. You don't know how to do a contract. And that scared me. I was like, man, here I am. You know, I thought I had, you know, project management like skills or at least something.
Yeah.
And hearing this myth being told to me over and over and over again, I'm like, oh man, like, I guess I'm not ready. So my concern was, I'm not prepared to get out. What do I do? Do I extend in the military and stay in longer?
Yeah.
Get college, and hopefully college will be the way to answer the question. And it took me about a year on LinkedIn, but I finally realized that you don't have the knowledge of the terminology for project management. You absolutely have knowledge in project management. You just call it different things.
Yeah.
We call it a workbook.
Yeah.
In the civilian sector.
Yeah.
In the military term, it's your plan of the week, plan of the day, daily list.
Yeah.
They're the exact same thing. You just call different
things. It's interesting, actually, you got me thinking, because if you go back to like modern industrialization post-World War II, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's roots and foundations in modern corporations that go directly to back to the military post-World War II, because where did all those people go after World War II? They went off into the private sector.
Absolutely.
Obviously, things evolve over the time and change shape. And I think one thing you said there is the thing about language is, if you go in someone else's world, it probably behooves you to learn their language, because they're sure as hell not going to learn yours, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I've got a friend who's currently working in the naval base here as a psychoanalyst. And he's gone back the other way. You know, he's 100% civvy, and he's been got an appointment on the military base. And he said, it's completely alien. I've got to learn the language. I've got to adapt to the environment I'm in. I've got to serve these people, my new customer base, and which is that side of the gates. So it's quite interesting as well. You said of spending a 4 years, so that's a clear message to folks out there: use the time you've got wisely and project as far forward as you can, but that doesn't do all the work for you. There's still a lot of work to do, isn't there?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when, you know, as I was growing up in the military, you know, you train for the military, you progress in the military because you retire at 20 years. Right? Yeah. That was the retirement. The Navy, you know, a few years ago came out with a different retirement system.
Right.
It's called a blended retirement system. So it's a hybrid of a 401k, type system, where as you serve in the military, you earn a retirement.
Right.
Before, it was you had to serve 20 years, then you would get a retirement based off of the top three paying years of your naval service. So there are sailors now who are getting in that are retiring at 8-9 years from the military. But if they're not already thinking and planning towards their retirement now, they're going to fail because they don't have the tools that they need as someone who's been in for, you know, 18 plus years. So this is one of the big things. My sailors that I have, my team, I push them and I tell them, hey, you know, the 100% the Navy is going to be here for 20 years if you so desire. But just in case, let's get you some actual civilian, some civilian stuff that is going to help you out. I think I told you earlier, I've got three of my team that are taking your certified project officer course that started November 1st. So they're going to go through and they're going to learn that skill set because ultimately it helps me out. Yep. Because the more I can get them to start seeing how to do project management at a very young age in the Navy, they can then translate that into their work. So when I go and tell them, hey, this is critical path, I need this done, they understand what that means. Yeah. And they can plan and execute to that.
Yeah. Man, I hugely respect you because 18 years of your life is a long time. I spent 12 years of my life and this sort of similar sensations in working professionally in China and left the UK and never went back. And now I've been 7 years in the US. So like 20 years away from the motherland, away from sort of where you grow up. It can be very rewarding, as you've just said, and also really daunting. And those transitions and those relocations can be super challenging. And just a little sum up, I just hear you talking about, you know, looking after mental health, building out trust, learning the language or effective communications. And those are all things, I'm going to thank you for saying those, because those are all things that are not only relevant to military folks, but it's everywhere you go in the world, everywhere you go, every sector you go into, every organization. So we're coming to the end. So I'm going to have a little bit of fun with you. I was just thinking of this, right? You're talking a bit like a quick fire closeout round. Okay, all so right. About 60 seconds, I'm just going to fire a couple of questions at you. And you've just got to say the first thing, speak from the heart, what comes to mind. Okay.
All right. I like it.
You ready?
All right. Let's go.
Okay. So what's your superpower?
Believing in people.
What's your biggest leadership strength?
Making myself accountable.
Most admired technological advancement in the last decade.
Submarines.
But no one else knows about it.
I may be
it.
Biased.
okay. Okay. Given a choice of buying a car at no budget, what car would you buy?
Tesla, hands down.
So pioneering, you're pioneering a new life. Explore another country or go into space.
Space, hands down.
Star Trek nerd, I can see it all over you.
Oh man, get me on one of those SpaceX flights. I will gladly do it any day.
Okay, last question. If you could only take one thing with you from your naval legacy into the outside world, what would it be?
Oh man, Chief Petty Officer Brotherhood. And sister, that network.
Cool. Well, Michael, this has been a ton of fun. And thank you so much for being on the DOL and Redefined and Relevant podcast. You sound like you're really planning well for your transition. And I have absolutely zero doubt that you will be valuable and significant continuing value to the outside world. You're very clear-sighted and you've got a lot of skill sets to offer. So, all the very best on your journey. And thank you for being on our show and supporting our cause.
Absolutely. Hey, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me today. It's been a ton of fun. And I'm excited to work with you guys in the future too.
Looking forward to it, Michael. Thank you, man.